Namaste. This is Francie, and welcome back to the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast, a place where we get to go deep with yogis, thought leaders, cultural creatives, and consciousness explorers to spread love, inspire you, and spread the good vibes. I believe that yoga is helping to change the planet, so I really hope you enjoy this episode. If you want to stay connected, sign up for our love letter at pureflow.yoga and receive our free weekly love and inspirations, as well as be the first to know about our new podcast and blog releases. We'll also share special deals here on our yoga retreats and trainings that we just don't share anywhere else. And if you like this episode and want to keep supporting us to create free, awesome things for you, feel free to support us with a monthly contribution. You can find that at pureflow.yoga/podcast. Your journey to becoming more inspired and connected begins now. So welcome to the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast. I am so excited today to welcome Kimana Nichols, a naturopath and Ayurvedic teacher who's the third generation from an entire family of holistic healers and educators. His mission is to help create a united system of holistic medicine and self-healing to support his dream of a world filled with intuitive and self-guided individuals. With experience in more than 20 modalities of bodywork and medicine, his passion for the healing arts and teaching has awakened a world wave of Vedic wisdom that's really changing lives. He's co-created Thai Vedic yoga systems to merge his modern understandings from yoga and touch modalities with the holistic wisdom and diagnostic brilliance of Ayurveda. Welcome, Kimana. So excited to have you here.
So great to be here. Thank you so much, Francie.
So I'd love if you could just begin to tell our listeners a little bit about the work that you're doing in the world.
I would say the biggest thing that I really dive into the most is teaching people about holistic lenses from traditional wisdom. Mm-hmm. And to understand that, I'm going to draw a little comparison from our modern Western science models and our ideas of separating the world into thousands of different categories, and how that's quite different from the traditional medicine systems of looking at what we call common language systems like yin and yang. Mm-hmm. In a Western science model, everything's ripped apart into so many categories, and it starts to pull our mind apart into separation too. Yet when we use holistic lenses, it tends to unite our mind together. With yin and yang, it doesn't matter if I'm looking at your body, I see the ratio of yin and yang, or a plate of food, yin and yang, weather pattern, exercise. And what this does is it starts to go, oh, yin and yang in me, yin and yang out there. Mm-hmm. And we start to unite our mind together and create more of a unified, holistic system. It's much easier to be holistic with these common language systems. And it extends much more than yin and yang. That's like the kindergarten of traditional medicine. In Ayurveda, we would 3 doshas, 5 elements, 20 opposing qualities. There's many what I call lenses, ways to look at the world that unite our mind with the divine.
Amazing. So what exactly is Ayurveda?
Ayurveda is an amazing traditional medicine system coming out of ancient India, and it's ways to look at holistic lenses of the world and to understand the relationship between our body, the health, and creating more purposeful lives. If we look at the traditional definitions of Ayurveda, it's to look at balancing our sense and our action organs to create more wholesome, balanced bodies, which then enable us to perform more dharma, more righteous action in the world. They understand that if we really want to help the world, we need to first start with creating a balanced body. And Ayurveda is the Indian science about balancing the body.
And this is essentially what yoga and yoga asana and all of the practices that we do within yoga, meditation, pranayama, the main purpose of this, from my understanding, is, you know, to build strength and clarity, but also balance. So how are yoga and Ayurveda related?
Yeah, there's a few different relationships there. One that I like to teach about in class is what I call the Trinity of Vedic Sciences. Ooh. And within that context, we look at how each of the different Vedic sciences has a main purpose that it works with. And if we looked at yoga, It's about uniting the mind with the divine, as it's traditional, ancient, classical yoga, when it wasn't so much into the physical asanas as it is today. And they had certain lenses that they used. They used the sacred division of one. You are one, you're absolute, there is no separation between you and everything out there. And they modeled that with the separation of three divisions. They call it the trigun, as you'd be familiar with this, sattva, rajas, and tamas. And that's the lens to understand the mind and how we can use the mind and its different states, tamas, the past, inertia, slowing down, rajas, desire, the future, wanting more action, and sattva, present moment, harmony, awareness. And when we have more sattva, it naturally leads us towards this oneness perspective. So in yoga, we use the sacred divisions of one and three. And then as we move into some of the other sciences, the divisions get further and further apart. More number divisions mean more complexity, harder to see the whole, holistic, but enables us to have more accurate diagnosis. In Ayurveda, we often use the division of three and five, and we see the relationship between those, three doshas and five elements. And then there's many other divisions within the system of Ayurveda, and the third trinity of Vedic science I call Jyotish, Vedic astrology. It's the science of light and spirit, and it primarily works with the divisions of 7, 9, and 12. And each of these three sciences, yoga, Ayurveda, and Jyotish, they look at how can we really understand the world as one? How can we balance the body and the mind? They have a slightly different purpose. I feel yoga in its traditional incarnation was more about the mind and uniting the mind with the divine. Ayurveda, as it was and is more about the body and understanding the physical body. And Jyotish is more about the spirit and your role within creation, knowing, oh, I'm part of this one being, but what's my unique role within the creation? And so now in our modern day context of yoga, where yoga is also becoming about the body as well, this relationship between Ayurveda and yoga becomes even more important. As we understand Ayurveda, we then get to understand what sort of asana might be most balancing for us, what sort of meditation might be most balancing for us. The tools within Ayurveda are very useful for that.
Amazing. So how would you compare Western medicine with Ayurvedic medicine?
I would say the big primary difference between the two would Ayurveda has a huge emphasis on cause. Its number one thing is to track and remove the cause of disease. And the three dosha system is really designed for that. A lot of people translate dosha as your body type. And yet the dosha direct translation means defect. The Sanskrit of dosha means fault or defect, because the system is designed to find the cause, designed where the fault came from that created a disease. So within the three dosha system, we're not just looking at someone's body type. In fact, they do a four-part thing in Ayurveda where they look at time, season, place, and individual. And with this time, season, place, and individual, they assess the dosha of that, the possible defects that are associated with certain times of the day, with certain seasonal influences in the environment, with certain places, the types of houses we live in, lots of other influences there. And then they look at the individual. And by assessing the dosha through these areas, they're able to accurately go, oh, this could be a cause in food. This could be a cause in season. This could be a cause in this organ of the body. And then they use that knowledge of cause to create balancing programs to the body. In the Western conventional medicine model, and it's nothing against doctors, they're just more trained in a system of treating symptoms when they occur and using pharmaceutical medication to deal with symptoms. And there's less emphasis on searching for the cause and finding natural treatments to balance the body before a disease comes about. Or Ayurveda also has a very intensive detoxification system to balance more serious diseases as well.
So if our listeners are completely new to Ayurveda, they're just learning right now what a dosha is, it sounds like a very intricate system. It's ancient. It's something like 5,000 years old, if I remember correctly.
That's right, yeah.
Is it accessible for the beginner?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I find that the Ayurvedic system, Unlike the Chinese system, which I've studied a lot of Chinese medicine as well, the Ayurvedic system is very easy to grasp within a short period of time. If you just spend a couple of days and one book, you'll probably find it opens up your mind to a whole new way of looking at the world. And the reason is because the Ayurvedic system is very common sense. It fits with our understandings of the environment and the world. It's not like learning a whole different other language. It's really just Vata, Pitta and Kapha. They're the only real new words. The elements are still elements that you already know, the five elements. So Vata, Pitta and Kapha and understanding what they are. And there's lots of opportunity to do that. Our YouTube channel has some great beginners classes for that.
So tell me a little bit about your YouTube channel. It's Holistic Nomads. I seem that you guys have been doing some amazing work, lots of following, and you are focusing primarily on Ayurveda?
Yeah, the Holistic Nomads YouTube really focuses towards Ayurveda and understanding the lenses of Ayurveda and how to look at the world through that. We do in a little bit of Jyotish, Vedic astrology and other subjects from India, yoga therapies as well. Yet the focus is seeing how you can look at the world through the lenses of Ayurveda and understand all those different subjects of life. And there's a bunch of different beginners classes that are listed there too.
And ultimately, it's just to help people lead more balanced lives.
That's right. It's our offering to the world.
Beautiful.
Where they're able to really gain at a beginner's level and our donation.
So I've had a quick look and I'm seeing that you're getting a lot of comments, a lot of people curious about what you're sharing. Are there common questions, common things that people out there in the world want to know about?
Yeah, there is a bit of a common theme that's going on. I would say the most common theme is understanding Vata.
Okay.
This is one of the three doshas, and Vata leads the other doshas. It's like the guiding influence in the body. If you're very new to this, you can sort of think of it as the nervous system, the mind, and the emotions. It's much more than that, but Vata has a strong effect on the nervous system, mind, and emotions. And just as the nervous system, mind, and emotions guide and influence the rest of the body so powerfully, so too does Vata. And it's the source point for so many diseases. So we see that that's the thing that is viewed the most is the How to Balance Vata video and understanding the qualities of Vata, what it means inside their body and mind, how to balance that with diet, because it cuts off so many disease problems. And in the context of yoga, it really helps us to meditate deeper. When Vata becomes imbalanced, it's hard to have a regular yoga practice. It's hard to have a regular meditation. It really changes our whole routine in life and shakes things up quite dramatically. So by balancing Vata, we're more able to go deeper into our yoga practice and success in many areas of life.
Amazing. So what are some practical tips for balancing Vata?
I would say the primary thing is to look at some routine and regularity. Vata, as a body type, loves to do different things all the time. They love to shake life up. Francie's going, I don't know that
sounds
one.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. So because that's a natural tendency, and to some degree it's a bit of a need, the thing that we look at with the doshas is each dosha will have a gift to the world. And part of Vata's gift is creativity, spontaneity, responding to the moment. So if they're going to give that gift for a longer period of time, then they need to be able to sandwich that gift with opposing qualities so that that gift doesn't wear out and destroy their body. So in the case of Vata here, if we can have routine and regularity in certain domains of life, particularly sleeping times, exercise and eating times. If we get those three in, then we can balance Vata and enable them to be so spontaneous and do all the other changeable things in their day to day. But if breakfast, lunch and dinner at the same time, it stabilizes the nervous system amazingly. There's far less chance of secreting stress response hormones. Doesn't mean they need to have a big amount. If they're not hungry, it just a little bit, but that regular meal times, regular exercise, regular sleeping times has an amazing effect on the nervous system and Vata.
You know, this reminds me of a conversation that we had a few months ago. I was trying to decide, should I do this, should I do that, should I go here, should I go there? And you gave me a bit of a talk about indecision fatigue. Because it, you know, it really does activate the nervous system and cause a lot of stress when you're unable to make a decision. And that's sort of a flavor of being, you know, Vata deranged. Is that what they call it? It's a funny word, Vata deranged.
Yeah.
Can you shed a little light for our listeners on indecision fatigue?
Yeah. It's something that a lot of successful writers and people really get into is how can I simplify my decision-making processes? Because the body can only do so much before it starts to wear out the nervous system. So as an example, I will go to a restaurant and I order the same thing all the time at that restaurant. I don't have to go and pick through the menu and think, what am I doing? I've been doing some filming for question and answer for our YouTube today. I wear the same shirt for question and answer every single time. I don't have to think, what am I going to put on for question and answer? That's my question and answer shirt, yeah? So the more that we can do this over our life with the things that don't necessarily need to be changed, and we can go, oh, I can keep that fixed, because you are guaranteed to have lots of things that you'll need to make decisions about.
Yeah.
And if you can allocate more space towards those, you'll find that not only you can make clearer and faster decisions for those things, but you'll also be able to do more creativity, because it's the same domain of life. Vata is creativity, Vata is decision making. So then we're able to creatively download great ideas. Some key writers, I think it's, is it Tim Ferriss or, can't remember at the moment, have gone into this thing where they had the same meal, breakfast, lunch and dinner, the same clothes, staying in this cabin while they were writing their next book that they were going through, specifically so that they could be creative in downloading the ideas for the book and cutting out any other decisions that they need to make.
In some ways, I guess it runs the risk of sounding a little bit boring, but the reality is, after that conversation that we had a few months ago, I've really been trying it out. You know, not looking at a menu too long, not deciding what I'm going to wear for too long, not deciding about my travel plans. And it truly has created so much more stillness inside of me, because there's always the mind trying to rationalize or justify why one option is more powerful than the other. So thank you for that.
Pleasure.
That for me has actually been a huge piece in my self-care, you know, being a business owner, having thousands and millions of ideas and decisions to make. Just cutting that down has been a really powerful self-care technique for me. And I know that you're also teaching on a lot of trainings, you're doing a lot of videos, you've got a lot going on in your life. How is it that you self-care?
I would say my primary self-care things are the same ones that I just talked about for Vata. I really go to bed early and I try to make that a consistent, absolute thing. And when I first started to adapt that, I had the same response that you were just talking about. Oh, my life could be boring. At that time in my 20s, I used to stay up late and go out to social gatherings a lot. And I was like, oh my God, if I go to bed early, it's going to change everything in my life. And what I found, though, was that my life is still really fulfilled and it didn't have that same sort of boredom that I projected out there. I ended up having different friends that like to wake up really early and just a different social life that built around those wants and needs. So one would be go to bed early. Two would be that I have regular meal times, really consistent. And it's especially important for me. Vata and Pitta are my two dominant doshas, so my Vata can go out of balance really easily. I find if I'm not eating those regular meal times, it has a big effect. And then my exercise practice would be the third. I use a regular meditation practice each morning. I will adjust that depending on the day and what's going on, and I'll alternate between some form of strength and conditioning, meditation, and a Qigong style flowing practice. It'll always change a little bit, letting that Vata creativity in there, yet I'll be very consistent on the time. Yeah, it'll happen just after sunrise.
That's that element of earth, that kapha element to keep you grounded.
That's right.
Yeah. Beautiful. So you are very well studied. You're interested in a wide range of, you know, different disciplines. And I'm wondering, who are your main inspirations or influences?
Yeah. There's been so many incredible teachers and inspirations over my life. I feel so blessed. I would have to narrow that into the immediate now. In the immediate now, I would say Gwyn Williams is one of my highlight inspirations.
Amazing man. Yeah.
A really incredible man. He's such an inspiring leader. His Zentai Shiatsu school in Australia has developed so much. We co-teach an event every year. And so for the last 5 years, I've had the pleasure of teaching with him, and I learned so much from him. He's just really incredible. His heart space, the way he leads his yoga classes is like poetry. It's really amazing to be part of him, and I've learned so much body work and presentation and just inspiring. And then I would say one of my first yoga teachers, Rachel Zinman, has been a real inspiration for me. She really kickstarted me on the path of teaching yoga, tantric philosophy, and a lot of the things that I still share with people today have come from the original teachings with her. And I'm going to wrap it with Barbara Ngo. Barbara Ngo, I co-teach the Thai Vedic school. She's one of the founders of Thai Vedic. And when it comes to structural therapeutic alignment, she is one of the best I've ever come across in the world. So, and it's an area that I've really been getting into a lot at the moment, is looking at the body, anatomy and physiology, and thinking how can we create yoga actions, specific assists within poses to really assist structural therapy for the body, building a little home program for the person to balance their body specifically suited to them. And I've learned so much from Barbara for that.
These are three incredible people that I've also had the privilege of doing a little bit of study with. Rachel Zinman, doing a lot of bhakti yoga and big, huge flower mandalas. So beautiful. Gwyn Williams, amazing partner yoga and body work and the art of touch. And Barbara Ngo, such a beautiful woman. And like you said, you were co-creating this Thai Vedic system with her.
With her and Sebastian Bruno.
We also mentioned Sebastian Bruno in our first podcast with Atira. That's great. He's amazing.
Yeah, incredible body worker, mind-blowing.
So what is Thai Vedic?
Thai Vedic, in its simplest orientation, it's an international holistic healing school that focuses on using traditional medicine lenses to understand modern healing modalities. So we use things like three doshas, five elements from the Ayurvedic system. And we also use quite a few traditional lenses from Thai Buddhist medicine and also Chinese medicine. And we don't try to just mash them together in some diluted form. We try to look at what is the most potent parts of those that can be integrated together. And then we look at modern day healing modalities from osteopathy to NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, to certain structural yoga therapy. A lot of that's more modern day. It's not necessarily so ancient in yoga. And then we combine them with these Vedic lenses, traditional yogic understandings of the division of one, your absolute and one, the trigunas to understand the mind, three elements, three doshas, five elements, and parts from Jyotish as our psychological philosophy system, purpose into the world. That's sort of the going from the small into the big there.
And this is both body work and yoga asana?
Yeah, at the moment it's six different modules, and it goes down a yoga therapy curriculum of level 1, 2, and 3 and a body work curriculum of level 1, 2, and 3. It'll expand with other focuses. They'll be developed in that same format, a 1, 2, 3 module for different holistic healing. And at the moment we bring that together as like the essential holistic healing toolkit. Is yoga therapy is how to design a self-healing program for someone, consulting them to heal themselves.
Excellent.
First it starts with the mind, then the digestion, and then structural.
Excellent.
And then the body work is working to help assist somebody to heal through your own touch or interaction with them. And it does a level 1, 2, and 3. It starts with vata, balancing vata in the body, then the digestive system, and then the structural body.
I'm loving and admiring what you guys are doing so much. As you know, I help to guide these 1, 2, or 3 week ongoing retreats at our Thailand Yoga Center. And one of the main things that arises near the end of the week after people have gone through these transformations and heart openings and this, you know, wow, it feels so amazing to be in my body after a lifetime of being busy and being in the office and, you know, that kind of culture. One of the biggest challenges or fears that arises is how can I maintain this practice on my own? And one of the things that I've been working on is creating an integration system to help people develop their home practice. So what you're doing sounds like it's incredibly in alignment with that, not only having a practice, but having just this system that you can constantly refer to.
Oh, so important for people. I really like what you're talking about there, Francie. I think it's a key thing when people come to these retreats and trainings that they're able to implement that into their life long term. And a lot of the times they need a bit of support with that process and a bit of a guided platform. I remember going to a workshop with Mark Whitwell, and he had a really funny thing about the dangers of yoga retreats.
And it was what did he say? He's a controversial character.
Exactly. he had this joke sort of thing, because he runs yoga retreats as well, but he was talking about how people have their hard life at home and then they go into a yoga retreat. Everything's so blissful for them. Their food's provided. It's such a great state. Yeah. And then they go back and they're like, oh, the hard life again. I want to go into another yoga retreat. And he was saying, the yoga retreats need to be harder. We need to whip them. We need to not feed them. We need to, making this whole comparison. And then he finished it up with, really what we need to be looking at is, how can it also be a realistic practice for their home environment? Yeah. And that they're able to go, oh, I'm taking this beautiful, blissful bubble that I've created and spread that seed into my home environment too. And I think having programs for people is key for that.
Yeah, great. I am really so excited to be welcoming you to our upcoming teacher training, our 200-hour teacher training. Yeah. And you're going to be sharing some anatomy, some wisdom from Ayurveda. What are you most excited about sharing?
I would say Ayurveda is absolutely my passion. I think it's such an incredible system that switches us onto the world in an amazing way. And there's a few things that I'll share amongst that. I'll have a look at the doshas and their relationships to yoga therapy as well, and how to individualize yoga with that. And one of my favorite subjects from Ayurveda is called Dinacharya. And it's about the daily regimes that we apply. And I'll give a few little pointers on Dinacharya throughout the training. And we can include a little free gift for people here as well.
Awesome.
It'll be a little A4 Dinacharya. Francie will find a spot for you to download it.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
And it gives like an outline of what are the ideal daily routines. And it applies to what we were just talking about. When you finish the training, what can you implement back into your life? It looks at the ideal times to be practicing your yoga, whether it's meditation or asana. There's different times of the day that really facilitate that. The ideal times to be eating, depending on what dosha is dominant. And there's just a lot of good resources to be able to look at implementing it into my daily life. So we'll share a bit of that. And the anatomy and physiology is a subject that I think is so important for yoga teachers. Really understanding the internal parts of the body and how they relate to yoga actions. That's really what I'll focus on. So it's not just learning dry anatomy and physiology, but looking at, oh, when we say these yoga actions, when we say, oh, hug the midline, draw the legs together, what's it doing internally? What is it actually activating inside the body? Why is it structurally important? And having a look at how that influences posture in relation to specific wording of yoga actions.
Awesome. There's a lot of controversy nowadays about running a 200-hour teacher training. A lot of people are doing them. Maybe they're getting diluted. But I just keep on coming back to the deep question of why. Why are we offering this? Why are we going through all this, you know, yoga alliance to do this? And it's for this reason. It's to really empower people with these understandings and wisdom traditions so that they can really live balanced lives in a practical way.
Totally. It's something I'm so passionate about, is sharing this information with the world. I've seen it change so many people's lives, and it's helped my life so much. And if I've gotten that much benefit from it, I should share it with the world. And we can really see it in all of the trainings we do, the people that come to our retreats and different things. It switches people on, and it shows them a different way of being and seeing. And yeah, it's really important.
Awesome. I am passionate about supporting you to share your passion. That's one of my main passions.
Yeah, great to work with you, Francie.
Totally. So this is the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast, and I want to know, what does it mean for you to be in pure flow?
An interesting question. Pure flow. For me, flow starts from not flow. It starts from what I call aiming the arrow, of going, this is the direction that I'd like to go towards, and then enabling myself to flow on the journey. And in that context, I use a few tools. The first one would be values. I went through a really interesting process in Australia where I was becoming quite successful before I left Australia, and I just really wasn't happy with what was going on in my life. The clinic was overloading and many other things. Mm. And I then started to realize that it wasn't that I was unhappy with the workload, it was that I was not living all of my values. And I went through a value defining process to figure out what are my top 10 values. And I now do this process every year. I figure out what are my top 10 values this year. And we often find that our highest values will tend to override the other values. So like I had a value to help others live their full potential.
Beautiful.
It's been one of my highest values for a long time. And yet further down the list, I've got to adventure in nature and explore the unknown. At number three, I've got to continually learn higher wisdom teachings and understand the body and mind and spirit better. Yet, when I became successful in the clinic world, I was no longer able to keep learning and studying. I was not as able to adventure in nature and explore the unknown. So I realized, I need to craft my dream life based on this year's value. I do my 10 steps of the value defining process. I figure out my top 10 values, and then I fantasize on a year that could include all of those values together. So that's what I call aiming the arrow. And then aim the arrow and I shoot it off into the year. And from that point, you have released the arrow. You have no control where it actually lands.
Too true.
This is now flow.
Yeah.
This is now listening to the moment and responding to the guidance of the universe. Because as much as we can have great ideas on aiming the arrow, the universe knows so much more than us where we're meant to land, what we're meant to go through. And sometimes I use the tools of Jyotish, Vedic astrology, to guide me in that process. I'm more able to go, might be a challenging period. I'm going to have to go through this at that point. Or sometimes I just use it in hindsight as well. I go, really intense period going on now. Let's have a look and see if it's involved in karma. And I can see really strongly in the chart, yes, there's a huge key thing that's indicating this process now. And it enables me to be more accepting to the present flow.
Yeah.
To go, that was the goal. Yeah, I've made the action because I know that it was the best action for me, another, and the world. And then now this is the moment and this is what the universe is providing me. And then I just step up with the same thing every time. Is it good for me? Is it good for another? Is it good for the world?
Ooh.
And I try and make that my guiding principle. And that comes from Jyotish. It's related to the three modes of Dharma. We have Dharma to the self, Dharma to another, Dharma to the world. And I use that as my flow guidance in the moment. So first, aim the arrow. Second, have a response to the moment and accept what comes. Third, as I'm responding to the moment, see if I can fulfill these three modes of Dharma.
Wow. So generally when challenge strikes, even if you can match it up with what you're seeing in the Jyotish charts or, by asking yourself these questions, are there other practices that you're doing or it's mostly a mental journey?
I would say for the most part, it's a mental journey. Yeah, I get pretty intellectual and mental.
Yeah.
Besides the practices that I've said already, meditation, exercise in the morning, go to bed early, I pretty much just get on with my life in that regard.
Yeah.
And I feel that these three modes of Dharma enable me to accept whatever's going on much quicker.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're going to make actions that can't necessarily be great for all three domains of life. But you can go, I'm going to sacrifice myself at the moment, Dharma to the self, because I can see Dharma to another and Dharma to the world. There's two boxes that are being ticked. This is the decision that needs to happen. You can accept it and flow with it. It's only when you get into the, there's only one, or there's not any of those three, that then you can start to go, the universe is clearly not guiding this. There's something else. If I open myself up to a different thing here, then I'm going to find an action that's even more fulfilling. And I find myself besides my meditation practice, action is my therapy of flow.
Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. I feel really inspired by this practice that you do every year of naming your 10 values, this aiming the arrow that you were just speaking of. And are there any recommendations or inspirations that you can give for how to create that list of 10?
Yeah, we can link up a little free resource for that. I've got a value defining process.
Awesome.
That you can go through with that. And you'll have a look at what might be your values. And in that list, it's usually used as a preparation for a consultation with me. So I'm going to give a few extra hints now for the people that are not doing the consultation. It'll give you a big list of possible values.
Okay,
there.
Great.
And then you've got to look at how many times those values come up.
Okay, great.
If they come up many times, they're likely in the top 3 to 5. If they don't come up so much, they're going to be further down the list. And then from there, if you get 20 values or something, try to shrink it down to the 10. Get the 10 most important values. And from the 10 values, then you just dream. What could be a life where all of these things are included in it?
Beautiful, this yeah. open-ended approach to letting go of control, but as you say, aiming the arrow.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. really beautiful. Yeah. So, I'm excited about that for our listeners. I'm excited about that for myself, just to reassess where I've been out of balance maybe and where I've been putting the energy in my own life.
Yeah, it's so a great one. Yeah.
It's a great one.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you mentioned something a few minutes ago. I just took a little note here. You were talking a little bit about yoga therapy, and I'm just wondering, what is yoga therapy?
It's a pretty of a buzzword at the moment.
Yeah, this is why therapy. I asked.
Yeah, yeah. I remember talking to Peter Clifford at one point, and he's like, all yoga is therapy.
That's what I think.
Yeah, yeah. So in the context of what we define it as in Thai Vedic, it's being able to tailor yoga to the individual.
Mm.
You know? So all yoga is therapeutic. And how could we make it more specifically suited to the individual? How could we say, oh, this person has a specific structural problem that's associated with their right shoulder. And now I'm going to get them to focus on these asanas, these internal actions. I'm going to understand that it relates to Uddana Vayu, the upward rising wind that lives inside the shoulders. And that could be related to goals and their specific values that they're moving towards or not moving towards. How could I understand a meditation practice, a mantra, a breath practice that would all suit to work with that psychological and physical condition inside the body? That's what we define as yoga therapy. So all yoga is therapy, and this is tailoring it to an individual with diagnostic tools to understand the individual better, and then specific orientated tools that direct the therapy to what they need.
Okay, yeah, it's totally a buzzword, and I just wanted to get some clarity, so thank you so much for that, and for the reminder that all yoga is therapy.
Yeah.
I'm always reminding students, you know, even if you just show up to the mat, do a couple of poses, you are doing the work to start balancing yourself and just celebrate. It doesn't necessarily have to look like an hour and a half of going to a yoga class and doing a specific type of flow. It's just tuning into yourself, tuning into what needs balancing, and offering yourself that, whether it's through movement or breath or lifestyle practice. So,
totally spot on, yeah.
So I'm wondering, you're such an accomplished person, really in awe of all that you've been achieving this life. You're touring around the world, you're offering sessions, you're teaching on trainings. Is there a legacy that you would like to leave?
Oh, if I think of a legacy to leave behind, I would say it's to look at the world through traditional medicine lenses. To start to look at the world as something where we can work together and realize what's inside our body is the same as what's outside our body.
Mm.
And I hope that the Thai Vedic school continues after I pass away. I'm really focusing with Sebastian and Barbara on writing curriculums that other people can share.
Yeah.
And how this sort of what appears to be ancient for many people and not so usable can be made into simple bite-sized pieces that can be used by the masses. I hope that it becomes mainstream knowledge, that everyone is taught as they're growing up some form of traditional medicine lens So they see the world as these united, sane principles, and I hope that's a legacy. And whether or not it has anything remembering Kamana or not, it's fine as long as the knowledge continues as a legacy.
That's a super beautiful vision to have for the world. Mm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your precious time today. I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom and your information.
Great to share with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
So Kamana will be sharing on our upcoming 200-hour teacher training in Koh Phangan, Thailand. And you can also learn more about his work on kamana.com, as well as holisticnomads.com, your YouTube channel. Is there anywhere else where people can find out about you?
They're the best places. From there, they'll get directed to any of the other things that are going on. So that's great.
And I think you have a pretty long waiting list for consultations.
Yeah, there's a waiting list on kamana.com. If you're interested in that, you can sign up your email and we'll notify you when this position's coming available.
Beautiful. And we'll include all of the show notes for all of the different resources and people that you've mentioned. So thank you so much. So grateful to have you in my life, in my world, and in the Pure Flow world. And we'll see you soon.
Look forward to it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Please check out our website, www.pureflow.yoga, and you can find all of the resources that Kamana mentioned in this episode in our blog. So hope to see you soon. If you like what you hear here, please share, like, spread the love, and we hope to see you here in paradise soon. Sending you love.